Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Happy Friday to all of you. If you listen to the Wednesday show, my tooth is feeling better. I mean, I guess it's not my tooth anymore. The gap where my tooth used to be, my face is feeling better. And I think a little less chipmunky today. So the show carries on. Coming up today, we're going to detail why so much of our culture wars, especially around the issue of race, is just completely manufactured. It's completely manufactured to continue political divides. I'm going to go through a few examples that are just absolutely infuriating. Also coming up, how the government is overregulating businesses and law-abiding citizens and underregulating criminals and what that is doing to our society. Also later on, I use the word wokeism a lot. I consider myself part of kind of an anti-woke movement. Well, national media thinks that Republicans in particular use the word wokeism, but they don't know how to define it. So we're going to talk about how you would define wokeism, how I define wokeism, and whether the word still has any meaning whatsoever. Let's start with what I mentioned there at the beginning, the fact that so much of our culture wars is completely manufactured. Particularly on the issue of race. You have one side that wants to claim the moral high ground, paint the other side as racist, and it's all just a complete farce to me. And I have several examples that have just popped up in recent days that I want to go through one by one. We talked on the show on Monday about how Democrats in Olympia totally dismissed the testimony of Hispanic farm workers, essentially saying that they were misinformed on the bill that they came to testify about.
When there is work, they need the extra hours. Being able to work 50 hours is what allows them to even survive. And it would be even more if they could work those extra 10 hours and have that be time and a half with overtime. And that's my last, my comments, because it's really hard for me to translate when I know that they're not given all the information. Thank you.
And why that's so interesting is Democrats are always talking about honoring people's lived experiences, particularly when it comes to people of color. And here you have Hispanic farm workers who have come to testify in support of a Republican bill. And because they're testifying in support of a Republican bill, these Democratic senators just cannot fathom a world where they would support the bill unless they just didn't understand what they were supporting.
I do want to clarify, there's no limit on the number of hours per se, just simply that after you work 40 hours, then overtime pay starts. So just to clarify, because there's no mandate that you stop working at 40 hours.
Yeah, we weren't against paying overtime. We just want a little bit of flexibility so we could provide more hours to the guys. I mean, if I pay 20 hours of overtime to every guy I have, I'm going to go broke. We're going to go out of business. So we just want a little bit of help so we could be able to provide more hours.
Thank you.
Yeah, because when you employ 400 guys a week and you have to kick in the overtime, it's gonna hurt.
So the next time that you hear Democrats say that we need to listen and trust in someone's lived experience, just remember, they only care about your lived experience if it supports or bolsters a policy that they're already pushing. I also want to talk about the city of Seattle. This is a story I brought up on the Wednesday subscriber episode. This is a city that talks about equity, equality all the time, that people, no matter their gender, sexual orientation, the color of their skin, should have an equal opportunity in life, should be treated equally, which we should all agree on. And then Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell goes and says something like this.
Our Seattle Restored program has already helped fill 30 formerly vacant downtown retail spaces with small businesses and entrepreneurs. We've put in art installations and retail stores. But our current plan will go even further. We'll fill empty storefronts with a special focus on small businesses owned by people of color.
So even with the sad state of downtown Seattle, blocks and blocks of boarded up storefronts, vacant storefronts, even with all of that, even with his belief in equality and equity, he is going to prioritize filling those storefronts with business owners based on something as insignificant as the pigmentation of their skin, as irrelevant to the matter at hand as the pigmentation of their skin. So remember, next time you hear Democrats saying they care about equality and equity, remember, they only care about equality and equity if it benefits people of a certain skin color. I also want to talk about a couple national stories in this regard. Nikki Haley announces her bid for the presidency. She is, by any stretch, any standard, a qualified, competent woman of color. And that's what, I mean, the left talks all the time about lifting up, praising women of color, supporting women of color, supporting them to take on roles that they'd be the first to do as a woman of color. They're all about celebrating that. Ketanji Brown Jackson, Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, Kamala Harris, the vice president of the United States, all women of color worthy of celebration because they are breaking barriers in their field. So naturally, Nikki Haley being a woman of color, of course the national media would absolutely celebrate the potential milestone of having a woman of color elected to the presidency. So let's listen to how they characterize Nikki Haley on MSNBC.
To quote Zora Neale Hurston, not all skin folk are kinfolk. Nikki Haley instead is the Dinesh D'Souza of Candace Owens. She's the alpha Karen with brown skin. And for white supremacists and racists, she's the perfect Manchurian candidate. And instead of applauding her, I am just disgusted by people like Nikki Haley who know better, whose parents were the beneficiaries, as Asha said, of the 1965 Immigration Nationality Act, which passed thanks to those original BLM protesters and the Civil Rights Act. Her father came here because he was a professor. He taught at a historically black college in South Carolina. That's how she became the proud American that she is. And yet, what does she do, like all these model minorities, which, by the way, is a strategy of white supremacy to use Asians in particular as a cudgel against black folks? Instead of pulling us up from the bootstraps and pulling others from the bootstrap, we're taught to take your boot and put it on the neck of poor browns, immigrants, refugees, and black folks. And that's what she did in her ad. So I see her and I feel sad, Mehdi, because she uses her brown skin as a weapon against poor black folks and poor brown folks.
Ah, yes. Nikki Haley, a strong, smart woman of color, but all of that apparently negated by her political ideology. So again, when the left tells you they support women of color, remember, they only support women of color who agree with them politically. And speaking of that same topic, Don Lemon.
She says people, you know, politicians or something are not in their prime. Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. Sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about? Wait.
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
It depends. I mean, it's just like prime. If you look it up, it'll if you Google when is a woman in her prime, it'll say 20s, 30s, and 40s.
If you think for a second Don Lemon would have ever said something like that about Kamala Harris, you are sadly mistaken. Also on the subject of Don Lemon, the Don Lemon of today at CNN is very quick to paint the right as racist. To suggest that people on the right simply don't understand the struggles that face the black community. I wonder what the Don Lemon of today would say if a Republican said the exact same thing about young black men that Don Lemon himself said about 10 years ago.
Because black people, if you really want to fix the problem, here's just five things that you should think about doing. Here's number five. And if this doesn't apply to you, if you're not doing this, then it doesn't apply to you. I'm not talking about you. Here's number five. Pull up your pants. Walking around with your ass and your underwear showing is not okay. In fact, it comes from prison when they take away belts from the prisoner so that they can't make a weapon. And then it evolved into which role a prisoner would have during male-on-male prison sex. The one with the really low pants is a submissive one. You get my point? Number four now is the N-word. By promoting the use of that word when it's not germane to the conversation, have you ever considered that you may just be perpetuating the stereotype the masser intended, acting like a nigger? Now, number three, respect where you live. Start small by not dropping trash, littering in your own communities. I've lived in several predominantly white neighborhoods in my life. I rarely, if ever, witness people littering. I live in Harlem now. It's an historically black neighborhood. Every single day I see adults and children dropping their trash on the ground when a garbage can is just feet away. Just being honest here. Number two, finish school. You want to break the cycle of poverty? Stop telling kids are acting white because they go to school or they speak proper English. A high school dropout makes on average $19,000 a year. A high school graduate makes $28,000 a year. A college graduate makes $51,000 a year. Over the course of a career, a college grad will make nearly $1 million more than a high school graduate. That's a lot of money. And number one, and probably the most important, just because you can have a baby, it doesn't mean you should, especially without planning for one or getting married first. More than 72% of children in the African American community are born out of wedlock. That means absent fathers. And the studies show that lack of a male role model is an express train right to prison. And the cycle continues.
Can you imagine if a Fox News host said those exact same things about young black men today that Don Lemon said 10 years ago? There would be calls for them to resign, calls for them to be fired. Don Lemon would be talking about it wall to wall on CNN this morning. So to recap, when the left says that you need to respect someone's lived experience, when the left says that we should support women and women of color, when the left says they believe in equity and equality, remember that they believe in those things unless it doesn't suit them politically. And then all of those buzzwords, all of those values and morals they claim to hold take a backseat. I had to talk about this story I saw out of the Bay Area. It was a story done by the NBC affiliate in San Francisco. And we've been using San Francisco as a kind of a similar example to some of the things happening in Seattle, because I think there's a lot of parity there when it comes to the homelessness crisis, when it comes to taxes, the business environment, drug use, politics. There are a few cities in America that parity Seattle quite like San Francisco. I would even argue San Francisco's probably worse off, like more into that crisis than Seattle is. And so in some ways, San Francisco has been coming out of it a little sooner, or attempting to, but I mean, still a long way to go. So I want to play for you this story from NBC San Francisco, but with the qualifier that it speaks to this larger issue that's happening, in particular in progressive cities and states, where you have an overregulation of law-abiding citizens and an underregulation of criminals. In this case, this story is taking place in Chinatown in San Francisco. And there are some businesses in Chinatown that are being hit with, in some cases, dozens of fines because of the types of awnings they have on their business. Awnings that have been there for decades. And at the same time, these same businesses have to deal with the homeless, the drug addicted, being outside their shops, sleeping outside their shops with no consequence. Again, here's a story from NBC Bay Area.
There is bad blood in Chinatown. Many business owners are being cited and fined by the city of San Francisco for their awnings and other violations. They say they've had the same awnings for decades and only now are being penalized. NBC Bay Area's Gia Vang is in the city with some answers.
One, 2, 14, 15, 22, 23. I have some more on my phone and on my email.
More than 20 in Lily Lowe's possession. Okay. These are notices of violations or NOVs from the city's Department of Building Inspection.
Everybody's really scared. Am I the next one who's going to get one?
Lily founded Be Chinatown, that in addition to maintaining the history here, also serves as an advocate for small businesses around. On the same block of Waverly, she can count many shops that got the citations for not having permits for gates that some store owners tell us they inherited. But mostly, the citations were for awnings.
文光印務公司, that is actually written by a professional artist.
Laura Lee has been operating a print shop here for more than 3 decades without any violations about their awning. The corrective action spelled out along with a 9 times box checked on most notices. Laura says creating confusion among the Cantonese and Mandarin-speaking neighborhood.
What do we do wrong? And what is this 9 times about? What sign codes, you know? We haven't moved our awnings in 30 or plus years, which a lot of local businesses in Chinatown is the same way.
Another place hit with a violation is this place, this florist and aquarium, one that community members tell me has been closed for about 20 years. Awnings have been part of San Francisco's Chinatown for generations. So why now? A DBI spokesperson says they're legally bound to investigate anonymous complaints. In the past 3 months, they got 187 anonymous ones about awnings. They said our inspectors aren't trolling the streets looking for awnings that violate the building code. And adds, if a violation is found, an NOV is issued regardless of how long the non-compliant condition has existed. The complaints were focused in four neighborhoods: Chinatown, the Richmond, the Haight, and the Tenderloin. The DBI says 62 have been doled out but couldn't specify the locations tonight. A spokesperson says most awning permits are issued over-the-counter and issued in less than 2 days and can cost up to $3,000. But that's money these small businesses, new and established, say they can't shell out.
You can see how quiet the street is. I don't think we can afford like that.
We really need city's help to kind of mediate and not do night times or whatever they're trying to do.
In San Francisco, Gia Vang, NBC Bay Area News.
So our friend Richie Nguyen, we've had him on the show before. If you recall, he is a convicted felon, and now he's doing these videos where he's out on the streets of San Francisco just talking about how abysmal things have gotten. He had a response to this story that is very similar to how I feel about it. He says, this is outrageous. These people can't put an awning on a building they rent out to help their business, but homeless druggies can pitch a tent in front of their establishment, hurting their business. Again, overregulation of law-abiding citizens, underregulation of criminals. This came up just on the Wednesday episode. If you haven't watched it, we did this awesome interview with a barbershop owner, a salon owner, who talked about his business in Ballard, how, you know, he's paying all these taxes, it's expensive to operate, and then there have been instances where there is someone, you know, passed out from drug use right in his alcove, and he calls the police and they can't do anything about it, and then he's left trying to figure out, do I just drag this person away?
Passed out cold on the Sunday market, I've got kids stepping over him on their way to the Ballard market, and he's got black tar heroin, blocking my entrance, and I'm left to my own devices to figure out how to move him so I can do business and pay this tax base. The cops did show up, two great guys. I've seen him before, sadly, because of my other break-ins, and they're like, Matt, nothing we can do. You know, sorry, there's nothing we can do. And, you know, that just kind of broke my heart right there. I'm like, you know, what does the city come to? Like, this is a great city. That street I'm on in Ballard is the best street as far as, you know, bars, restaurants, the nicest, smallest, cool businesses. There's not a lot of national tenants. It hasn't turned into, you know, a mall. It's a really great place. And if you don't keep places like that safe, where are people going to gather? Where are people going to go?
Again, that was an interview with Matthew Humphrey, which you really should listen to if you haven't. It's on the Wednesday episode. Just such a common sense guy about some of the challenges facing businesses. And by the way, we also talked about, as a white business owner, Mayor Harrell saying he's going to prioritize black business owners to fill this bevy of empty storefronts downtown, as if that should be your first priority. I mean, honestly, you should give a business permit to anyone willing to do business down there. It's so stupid. And, you know, we've seen themes of this underregulation, overregulation issue in Olympia, in Washington State, where there have been so many bills introduced that put more of a burden on the law-abiding while putting less of a burden on criminals. You know, the bill to raise the minimum wage for incarcerated people. Who do you think is going to pay for that? The taxpayers. The bill would also make it so that even if they're working for minimum wage behind bars, they don't have to pay any money toward offsetting the cost of their incarceration, which right now they do. So who does that fall on? It's not free to incarcerate someone. It falls on us. So here are those of us minding our business, following the law, and now our burden, our tax burden is going up to help people who have committed crimes, who are serving time for those crimes. It is beyond my understanding. You've got bills about letting people off the hook, you know, not letting police pull over someone who's got an expired tab, because it's like a crime of poverty, and they say it disproportionately impacts people of color. Meanwhile, how many times have the law-abiding in this state voted to drop the price of car tabs to $30, and then every single time Democrats in Olympia push to change it? And then meanwhile, they're saying, oh, but if people don't want to follow the rules because they can't afford it or because they're black, because the color of their skin, then police can't pull them over for that anyway. It's just at every juncture, overregulating the lives of people who are paying their taxes, who are working hard, who are following the rules, and cutting a break to people who aren't doing any of those things. If that doesn't bother you, regardless of political ideology, then I don't think you're paying enough attention. As I told you guys, tonight I'm going to Adele in Vegas, her residency, flying out for an evening show. Super excited. And I've been, this has been one of the trips on my radar as I've been losing weight with the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I have this Adele trip, and then I am going to New Zealand with my fiance and my friend Nicole and our friend Todd in March. And so for sure for New Zealand, I'm like, I got to get back in bikini shape. And in like 2 months, I've gone from absolutely cannot wear a bikini to feeling just fine about it because I've lost around 30 pounds in just a couple months on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. No strenuous exercise routine, no super strict diet where you have to eat these little packaged meals and just be miserable every day. Honestly, it's been really easy for me to follow. It's not magic. You do have to eat healthier. You do have to watch what you eat. You do have to weigh yourself. But I will tell you that if you start on it, you're going to see results instantly if you follow the plan and do what Dr. Coogan says you need to do over at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. So look, it is end of February. Before we know it, it's going to be nice out. You're going to be at the beach. You're going to be taking vacations, summer break, spring break, etc. If you start now, you're going to see results. Again, if you follow it to the letter. I mean, I've slipped up a couple times. Okay, I'm not perfect. But if you really commit to it, and what Dr. Coogan told me when I started is treat it like a job. Just treat it like a job, and you say, okay, this is what I'm going to do for 60 days. And then if I need to lose a little more weight, I can continue doing it for another 60 days. So I swear, I mean, it sells itself because I've lost so much weight. I look so much better. So give Dr. Coogan a call, or better yet, you know, just schedule a free consultation with him at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. eastsideweightlossclinic.com. It's a 15-minute consultation, totally free, and then you can figure out if the program is for you or not. Dr. Ryan Coogan, DC, results may vary. It's Friday. That means it's time to check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It's our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Joining us is my sister, Miranda, Florida-based correspondent extraordinaire. Hello.
Hello.
I want to talk about, I thought it'd be interesting because we've been talking a lot about our legislative session in Washington State, the bills being introduced during Florida's legislative session, much different than ours. So I thought it'd be nice to touch on a couple of those. But first, I had to ask you about this. So on MSNBC, Jason Johnson, who I didn't even know who that was. Unfortunately, now I've become familiar with his style of news. He is an MSNBC contributor. He was talking to a guest about Ron DeSantis's presidential hopes, I guess. He hasn't launched a bid yet. And this is what he said about the state of Florida.
In my view, there are three states yet you can't really run from if you're trying to win across America. You run from New York, you're too crazy, you're liberal. You run from California, you're too crazy, you're liberal, you're trying to make sure I can't get plastic straws. You run from Florida, it's all crystal meth and alligators, right? Like, I mean, that's what people think. And I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm saying those are sort of the national reputations of those states. So when you see Ron DeSantis running and claiming that he's going to do for America what he's done in Florida, it seems like that'd be a problem.
Before I have you comment on that, he also went on to, I was kind of curious, like, where is he going with that? What is he, where is this heading? And then he played this clip from Ron DeSantis and sets it up as if like Ron DeSantis is totally out of touch.
I'm going to play you some sound from him and then also how that's failed in the past and get your thoughts on the other side.
So what have we done in Florida? When they were talking about defunding police and slashing budgets, we said, not on my watch. As much as I'm proud that Florida is doing well, I want the country to do well. I want all of these communities to do well.
Now, Kurt, that may make sense in some context. He can talk about policy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But are those policies the first things that everybody thinks about coming out of Florida?
No.
I mean, we must have entered some sort of quantum realm here if Ron DeSantis thinks that the entirety of the United States of America wants to have happen in our country what he has done to the state of Florida. If he thinks, for instance, that most of this country, they want to spend their time banning books, if they want to spend their time dealing with mass shootings, if they want to spend their time ignoring the catastrophic impacts of climate change, which, by the way, will hit the state of Florida first, that's not a recipe for...
Okay, so first of all, when you hear him say that when people think of Florida, they just think of crystal meth and alligators. Your reaction as a Floridian?
I mean, as a Floridian and as just a person in general, of course, it's pretty ignorant to nail any state down to two characteristics. Alligators, I'll support that. You know, like we have football teams named after gators, and you come down and you want to come see gators. We'll take that. We'll take the gators. But first of all, I don't think any state in America is free from claiming meth. You know what I mean? We all have a huge epidemic here when it comes to that. But it also is just like really uneducated to say that, because Florida is a beautiful state. And to me, you think sunshine and beaches. Those are things that come to mind when I think of Florida, even before all the political stuff.
Yeah. And I don't get, yeah, I think of definitely sunshine, beaches. And I mean, yeah, you're right about alligators. That's why in the Florida Report intro, we have a little alligator creeping in who meows. And nobody seems to have a problem with the alligator meowing, which I always thought was funny. But I also don't understand, you know, for this like leftist news organization, MSNBC, to insult an entire state like that. What's to what end?
Yeah. He even went on to say some stuff about a couple other states. Like if you run out of California or New York or Florida, you have a hard time escaping, like, you know, I guess the stigma that comes with those states. But that's also just, of course, one man's opinion, because I don't think a lot of people think about meth when they think about Florida, even if they are thinking about alligators. But I did actually say something about this during that Q&A that we did together. Somebody had asked, you know, what I thought maybe DeSantis' biggest obstacle would be. And it was getting out of that Florida man stigma, but I think that he's proven there's so much more to the state of Florida than, you know, alligators and things like that. So, you know, that's just kind of an ignorant way to portray our state and our governor.
Period. Yeah. And to alienate, if there is, you know, Democrats need to win Florida. They need to win there. And that's kind of one of the states where it's like they look to that as a bellwether for who's going to eventually win the presidency. And so just to like say, chalk it up to, oh, alligators and meth, it seems super condescending and super strange. And then there was a reaction from a Twitter account I thought was pretty funny, too. You want to read that?
Yeah, this comes out of DeSantis' War Room Twitter account. It says MSNBC contributor Dr. Jason Johnson claimed that when people think of Florida, they mostly think of crystal meth and alligators. Dr. Johnson would know all about that because he came to Florida to campaign for Andrew Gillum, later found passed out in a hotel with crystal meth.
Got him. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I got to be morally consistent there. And yeah, crystal meth usage, unfortunately, is something that isn't relegated to one political party or another. So no. Just an odd line. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about a couple of things happening in Florida's legislative session. We know there's this huge conversation around people who want to transition from the gender they were born into a different gender. And in Florida, there's a bill that would essentially mandate that companies cover detransitioning. Is that correct?
That's correct. So it's a new bill that was filed this week would require companies offering gender reaffirming healthcare to be liable for an employee's detransition. It's the proposed Reverse Woke Act, it's called. It was filed on Monday by a Florida senator. It would require companies to pay for an employee's detransition, even if that employee is no longer with the company or received the treatment out of state.
Interesting. So basically, kind of putting companies on notice that, hey, if you're going to cover transitional surgeries for people, then you're going to have to cover detransitional surgeries if they choose to do that.
Absolutely. And I actually think that that's kind of like, is so ironic, because technically it would be the same thing either way. They'd be transitioning to what they identify as, whether it's a reversal or a move into something different. It's all the same thing. So they would probably have to cover that even if they're offering it to begin with. I don't know. Kind of just goes in circles at that point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think they're just kind of sending a message, and maybe you'll have companies that, if that law were to pass, that rethink whether they're going to cover transitional surgeries, if they could be on the hook forever, whatever that person decides to do, if they bounce back and forth or whatever. That's interesting. Never even thought of that. Yeah. And then there was this other one that's not political, but I thought it was a good topic of debate. So it has to do with dogs, which we all have an opinion on, and the little pups sticking their head out of car windows.
Yeah, so it's a new bill that has been proposed in Florida that would enact a series of guidelines and protections against like allowing your dog to sit in your lap while you drive, stick its head out the window while it's in the car. It goes as far to say that your dog or cat or animal that you're transporting needs to be either in a crate or with a pet safety belt or some kind of tether in the vehicle, and then not being cared for by the driver, which is really restrictive to me. I mean, I'm all for safety because, you know, having a dog jump around the car sometimes is a little difficult to drive with. And of course, sticking any head out the window is also dangerous in and of itself. But who doesn't like to see a little dog poking its head out the window at rush hour?
That's what I was thinking. It makes me so happy. And the little doggies with their tongues out. That's ridiculous. That's way too much. I mean, I agree with the no dogs on your lap. And I think that just goes hand in hand with other aspects of distracted driving. Like, that's just silly. But yeah. I mean, there are plenty of times where it's perfectly safe for your little happy dog to stick its head out the window. And I'm sorry, I'm not restraining my dog with a dog safety harness. Okay. It's just not happening.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's a few other things in here, like some restrictions on tethering your dog to like trees or posts out in your yard without supervision, and decline cats, and the sale of rabbits being restricted. So there's some other things in there that make sense, but it's kind of a trail mix of things all wrapped up in one bill. So hopefully they can weed out some of those really annoying gray areas.
Just like over dog regulation. Yeah. I'm not someone who would tether my dog out in the yard, but I also don't live in the country. I mean, we grew up, that was a very normal thing. It doesn't mean you don't love them. Obviously, yeah. You don't want a dog just like for hours out, you know, being able to get off the property or whatever. But that seems odd to me too. And just like an overreach. So interesting stuff out of Florida. Well, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a great weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I'll confess, I use the word woke a lot, especially when I'm talking about this poison of identitarianism in our society, where the only thing that matters are these immutable characteristics as opposed to a meritocracy. And there is this article that I couldn't help but is first published in the Washington Post. And it's just so silly to me. So it says, the headline is, Republicans use wokeism to attack the left, but struggle to define it. And it goes on to talk about how, you know, everyone from Ron DeSantis to Republican members of Congress to, you know, reporters for right-leaning news organizations like Newsmax just sort of use this phrase woke without having a strict kind of definition for it. Which I think is kind of odd, because I don't know that woke is something that has to have a strict definition. I think you kind of know it when you see it. I mean, I look at woke as people who are putting feelings before facts, people who are putting identity before merit or before ideas. And, you know, I think that the definition of woke really depends on what you're applying it to. That being said, I do kind of understand, you know, not wanting to just lump the other side's ideas into this like little box. So for instance, I really dislike when people in Seattle, including the media and politicians, progressive politicians, call anything that isn't popular right wing. Like if somebody pushes back against one of their policies, they just say it's right wing pushback, which for instance, that happened on this Senate bill where it would let kids run away to a shelter to seek certain types of health care. And there was a lot of pushback. I mean, 4,000 mostly parents signed up in opposition to that bill, Senate Bill 5599. And then the bill's sponsor, Senator Marco Elias, put out this tweet and this op-ed saying that it's just pushback from the right wing. And so I hate it. It's like everything they don't like is right wing, far right, or they just dismiss any valid criticism of their policies as coming from the right wing, even when it's not. And so I can see how using wokeism can fall into that same trap to say, oh, this thing is, you know, that's just woke, as opposed to having real hard conversations about some of the disparities in society, some of the issues facing the LGBTQ community or the transgender community, et cetera. But I find it interesting that this whole article in the Wall Street Journal, or the Washington Post rather, sorry, it isn't about how there is this real problem on the left with putting feelings before facts, with being obsessed with identity. It's all about how Republicans just simply are using this phrase that they can't define. And it's just so indicative of something that the Washington Post would publish. This is a professor, Candace Watt Smith, an associate professor of political science at Duke University. She said, what we're seeing is a kind of standard practice of conservatives and conservative reactions to black political movements to weaponize the words and concepts they've used to undermine efforts of social movements. What I found funny about that is they literally include a professor who's being woke to argue against use of the term woke. I mean, that professor's quote right there is totally woke. That you're suggesting that anyone who is critical of those movements, like the Black Lives Matter movement, it's built around kind of racism. When for me, my pushback of the Black Lives Matter movement is it was co-opted by a lot of violent people, and also $9 million, which they raised $9 million and like millions of it went to enrich the founder's own family members and buy property. So to me, the Black Lives Matter movement in its official capacity was a complete scam and did very little to actually better the lives of black people in America. So anyway, if you want to read this, the Seattle Times also reposted it. Republicans use wokeism to attack the left, but struggle to define it. So there are some interesting takeaways, I think, when you need, you know, I think you have to have coherent, solid arguments against some of those ideas that you dislike. I don't think you should just dismiss it as wokeness gone awry. I think you really have to detail what's wrong about those policies and those movements, like I just did with BLM, as opposed to saying, oh, it's woke. You could talk about specifically, well, here's my issue with it. You know, my issue with it is the founder raised $9 million and then bought property for her family member, hired her brother for a lucrative security contract when he had no security experience, et cetera. So specificity is your friend. I'm not saying that it's going to win arguments, because it's impossible to win arguments these days, because no one wants to be proven wrong or will acknowledge when they're wrong. But specificity is always better. And the same with the left, when they want to dismiss everything as just right-wing criticism. It's like, okay, specifically respond to the criticism. Respond to the criticism with facts, with figures, to prove, you know, prove your side, as opposed to just outright dismissing the other side. Okay, per the usual, we will end the show today with some of your comments. In regard to Bruce Harrell saying that he's going to prioritize business owners of color for vacant storefronts downtown, as if Seattle can afford to be picky, Y writes on Patreon, no one picks stores based on the race of the owner. I never even know who the owner is unless the owner is the only one working in the store. And I pick a store to go into based on what they have and things that intrigue me, not the race or identity of the owner. To pick and choose who to support based on the race is racism. And I am quite frankly tired of equity arguments. It's a shame because I know true racism all across the board. But now every time I hear the words racism and inequity, I just roll my eyes because a majority of these aren't racism or inequity at all. And I tend to agree. You know, racism, or calling someone racist, it's one of those terms that you really should not overuse, because there are examples of racism and racist people. And you dilute it when you just look at anything you don't like and it's like racist. It's ridiculous. Bill writes on Patreon about our interview with Matthew Humphrey on Wednesday, the barbershop owner in Seattle who has decided he is just going to speak his truth about what's happening in the city. Bill said, loved the show. May more business people speak up. Without business, there are no jobs. Without jobs, there is no money. Without money, there are no social services. It takes balance. Seattle, bring the balance back. Stop killing the sources of social programs in a misplaced effort to build them. So true. Stop listening to the loud and uninformed who speak volumes of worthlessness. So true. Giving money to people to build businesses causes them to not learn the sacrifices and decision-making process to keep one going. And look, I'm okay with some incentives to get people started in a business, especially with the state of downtown. I'm more okay with tax breaks, you know, saying, okay, you know, get the business off the ground, and then we will make it easier as a city. We will lift, we will reduce regulation, which, remember, we talked about earlier. I don't think there's any downside to that. Diana says on Patreon, Matt for city council. I really do hope Matt Humphreys runs. I think he would be great. Chris on Locals about Matt. At last, sanity. Brandy, thank you for having this individual on your show. We need to do everything we can to promote his thoughts and ideas, a light in the darkness, as you are. I also really quickly wanted to read a couple comments. Let's see here. There were more comments on Facebook about Bruce Harrell and his like racism of saying, oh, I'm going to choose business owners based on the color of their skin. Mike says, fighting racism with racism. Wendy says, sounds like he's creating a caste system. Brian said, fast forward to the next riot scene and these business owners will regret taking him up on his offer. Maybe he thinks, oh, but you might be onto something, Brian. Maybe he thinks that if he puts black-owned businesses downtown the next time there's a riot, these rioters won't target those businesses, but I think that they would be woefully mistaken. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you for your kind words this week as I wrapped up my fill-in period on Cairo Radio and your just continued sweet support about the loss of Dory Monson. You guys are great. Love you. If you have not become a subscriber already, please do so. It's just $5 a month. It helps me do the podcast full-time, and we're also racing toward an expansion of the show in the spring that I'm super excited about, but it takes money to do these things and to hire people. So $5 a month, you can sign up at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.